Hello, and welcome to This Thing Called Life, a podcast dedicated to sharing stories about acts of giving, kindness, compassion, and humanity. Your host, Andy Johnson, will introduce you to powerful stories about organ, eye, and tissue donation from individuals, families, and healthcare teams whose experiences will inspire you and remind you that while life is hard, unpredictable, and imperfect, it's also beautiful. We are so happy you're here. Now, let's join the show.
Welcome, everyone, to This Thing Called Life. I'm your host, Andy Johnson, and I am so excited that you are joining us today. I hope everyone out there is staying safe and healthy and enjoying the holiday season. I know it's been tough, but hopefully you're able to find something that you can find joy in during this season. So this episode and the next few episodes, we're going to focus on the topic of grief and loss and really look at how does that show up in your life every day? What are some potential triggers? How does it feel? And ways to work through it, especially during the holidays. I know that this year has been especially tough and a lot of us are grieving a lot of different things right now. And so we want to talk about that. It could be, you know, loss of a job, loss of a loved one, but things are just, they're tough right now for a lot of different people. And so we wanted to come together and talk about that. And with that, I have an expert with me today. Her name is Jen Proffitt. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for being here with us today. So Jen works with me at Life Center. And I'm going to have her talk a little bit about her role here and what she does.
Hi, thanks, Andy. So I am a family aftercare coordinator here at Life Center. There are two of us, and what we do is help to support families after the donation process takes place. So we do that through just creating touch points with families every 3 months or so is kind of our standard. And we support those families up through 18 months. However, we also, if families call and ask for resources, we're happy to provide those, as well as finding additional ways, such as we hold a celebration every year that helps to honor donor families and recognize their loved ones. So finding ways to help them memorialize their loved one. Additionally, I think we help to facilitate correspondence. So if a donor family and recipients write, then we are the ones that kind of help facilitate that process. So it's a really neat position. I think it's something that allows our families to feel supported after the donation process happens. Mm-hmm. And we do that with all families that we work with. So the organ, eye, and tissue families, mm-hmm. As well as those that maybe said yes to donation and for whatever reason, it wasn't something that was able to happen and take place. We still want them to know that we are honoring them and their loved one.
Yeah. So prior to you moving into this role, you actually worked as a family services coordinator. And so can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that looked like and what you did to support families in that role?
The family service coordinators here at Life Center, their focus is to speak with families at the hospital. And when their loved one has an opportunity to help through the gift of donation, it's a very unique role. It takes a very special person to be able to do that. They are amazing at what they do because they have a way of supporting families on the hardest day of their life, mm-hmm. and being able to make something, you know, have those conversations and help to meet the family where they are, support them at the hospital, and provide this opportunity that, you know, may be hopeful and meaningful for a family. Mm-hmm. And then after donation, they support them through the entire donation process, through phone, through at this point, Zoom and any other means possible, as well as in person when they can. And then after donation, they call the family and just make sure that they understand how their loved one was able to help. And then following donation, they also send, you know, a letter to explain a little bit about who their loved one was able to help.
I can't even imagine what it's like to sit with a family who has experienced this sudden loss, because quite frankly, that with people who often become organ donors, they have suffered something that's a very sudden and acute, and it's a non-survivable brain injury. But it just has to take something out of you. So I can't say enough about our family service coordinators and just that heavy burden that they carry. And given the current conditions that we're living in with this pandemic, and you and I have talked about this over the last week, that the word you keep coming back to is it's all just really heavy.
It is. It's a heavy time.
Mm-hmm, very heavy. Okay. So Jen, can you tell us what is your background and kind of what led you to this work?
So I am a licensed social worker. I became a licensed social worker in 2003 and worked with a variety of populations, from adults with mental illness to and homeless to kids who had some behavioral issues and couldn't maintain in their classroom setting, and then also through adoption and foster care. And so through all of that, I, you know, really kind of started, I think, realizing that there are common themes among anyone that you interact with, right? And that's that we all want to feel heard. We all mm-hmm. want someone to kind of witness what's going on in our life. And we just need someone there. And so, you know, fast forward a few years, I decided that I wanted to kind of, I don't know, take a little hiatus from social work, and I decided to go into nursing, which I really loved in a lot of ways.
So you were a nurse.
Yeah. So
I did not know that.
2013, I became a nurse, and I worked through with children for a few years. And it was kind of funny just because I loved the kids. I loved the families. It was just a very rewarding job. However, I would find myself being like, when there was, I remember one situation where there was, you know, a family member in a room and with a little baby, and the baby was, you know, without giving details, but just, you know, had not left the hospital since birth. Mm. And I remember there was a situation with the baby where she was not doing well. We needed to kind of call rapid response. So things weren't going well. And the family member was the only one there in the room. And I remember going in and being wearing my nurse hat and going, okay, I need to, you know, kind of help with this and, you know, do what needed to be done. And I did. But I always remember thinking, there's someone else in this room that doesn't really know all of the story. And I can't imagine what she's going through right now. And so as soon as the higher ups and the respiratory therapist and everybody that needed to be there were there, I stepped back with her. And I remember explaining, this is what's going on. Do you see that she's responding this way? And kind of talked her out, and she ended up being fine. But it was just a situation where I just remember thinking, I can't imagine being alone in a situation like that. And so, you know, it's one of those
no
things.
Idea. I mean, you're in it, but you really have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
So to have you there,
but
to
I
support that person.
Again, I couldn't, that's where I land. It's kind of that, like, I'm thinking about who all's in this system, who's all's in this picture, and who needs supported. And at that point, it was that family member. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, afterwards, I started looking around and thinking, how do I do this? How do I blend medical and social work and everything that I love together?
Right.
And then Life Center kind of happened. And I thought, as a family services coordinator, especially because I was in the hospital and speaking with families, and I thought, yeah, this is kind of how I do that. You know, this is a way to support them, but also have the medical knowledge to be able to answer some of their questions or help them to, you know, guide them to the physician or the nurse that could.
Right.
So yeah, it was kind of full circle, but I think that the theme for me is just, again, people want to be heard, mm-hmm. and people, I think, listen, we were given two ears and one mouth for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I live life is, unless I'm sitting here talking on a podcast, typically I am the listener in the room.
Jen is the listener. So often we're in team meetings and Jen will we'll get through whatever we're talking about. And then Jen will step forward and say, well, have you thought about the X, Y, and Z? And always without a doubt, I'm like, well, no, I didn't even think of that, but that's a really good idea. So I love our team dynamic because everyone has kind of their own perspective, but they also have their own way of processing information. And you and I think are more processors.
Agreed.
You know, so we're like kindred spirits in a way. So I appreciate that about you because you do always, you think through like things. You're just so thoughtful about.
My brain has contingency plans for contingency plans. That's just how it works.
And that's so necessary. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So as we're talking about this thing called grief and loss, and particularly during the holidays, I really felt like you would be a good person to talk to about this very topic, because I think that just through your work here and before Life Center, I just think you have some insights that could be helpful to listeners who might be dealing with something. And so I just want to start out and ask, what does grief look like?
I think if you look around right now, you'll see it. Mm. It's everywhere, right? And you alluded to that before. So I think grief is something that is as unique, and they say, as a fingerprint, you know, so it may be, you know, you look at physiological and physical and emotional changes, but that may or may not fit everybody. So I think that there are, you know, people grieve differently. And so what you see is not necessarily universal. So somebody may have certain, you know, may exhibit different, like I may be more anxious or may feel, you know, like chest tightening and crying and just outward expressions of grief. And then there are people who, you know, don't grieve that way and are more silent, and
right,
it doesn't take away or make their grief any less. So I think it's hard to say this is what grief looks like.
Mm-hmm. Because it could look different.
It's no different than, in my mind, how, you know, with this pandemic, everybody reacts differently. Some people are bunkered down and saying, I'm not going, you know, and right, wrong, indifferent. It's just how you respond to a crisis. It's how you respond. You know, some people are very much on one end and some people are on the other. Right. And I think that grief is very similar in the sense that you see the broad range of reactions and how people respond to an emotional trigger.
So to your point, when we had Debbie Polino on the podcast a few weeks ago, and for our listeners, Debbie's son, Nick Polino, passed away as a result of a car accident and was able to help others through organ, eye, and tissue donation. But the thing that she said, that one of the things that she said that stuck with me was, she had a choice to make. It's like almost like she was at this crossroads, and she could either go down this one path of just going down into this deep, dark hole, or she could try to move forward as best she could. And I've heard that from other donor families who experience loss like that. I guess my question is, if you're not so inclined to take that more positive pathway, you know, because not everyone's built that way. I mean, that really, it just could really disrupt someone's life to experience loss. And when we speak about loss, there's loss, and, you know, and losing someone to a death, but there's also all kinds of other loss that I think we've seen over the course of this year. But what would be your advice to that person who is, they're in that deep, dark place and they really need to try to pull themselves out, what would be like the first thing you might say to them?
You know, I think that support is huge, mm-hmm. wherever that comes from. Again, feeling like there's connection, especially now. So I think having, you know, a conversation about where support comes from and how do you build support would be, you know, kind of first steps. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just, you know, being patient with yourself, be kind to yourself, mm-hmm. give yourself permission to not be okay for a little bit. I think that's different. You know, if it's temporary and you're saying this is a time where I'm not okay. It's okay to not be okay. You know, that's right. Something's happened. But I think when you go to a point where you're not okay for so long and it's debilitating or there are, you know, concerns that your basic needs are not met and there are risks of, you know, mental health, and that is when you should seek out help. Mm-hmm. Call your doctor and look for support groups. Right now, there are a lot on Zoom, but if that's an avenue, you know, I think that there's always, there are many resources out there. Starting with your doctor is always a good option because you know them and they know you and right. your baseline. So if you're not sure, but there are EAPs through employers, there's yes. Psychology Today that has different therapists mm-hmm. on there. Again, some people aren't quite ready for that. So I think it's just finding a support person to check on you, to reach out mm-hmm. and kind of make sure that sometimes more eyes, people looking at you, it's easier to have them say, hey, I see you and you're looking like you're struggling when we can't identify that in ourselves.
Yeah. And it goes back, I think, to that point of, giving yourself permission, asking for help, and being vulnerable. That's Absolutely. What I keep coming back to, is just allowing yourself to be vulnerable. And another family that we work with, she said, accept the help. When people offer to help, accept it.
Yeah, she said, let people love you.
Let people love you. That was it.
Yeah. And she said, please feel free to use that
yes.
whenever you need to. But I love that because
let people
it's
love you.
Let people love you. Open yourself up to being vulnerable. Yeah. And if someone wants to bring you groceries or wants to cook, you know, a meal or do your holiday shopping, whatever it is, let them love you.
Right. Right. And I think too, one of the positives that I've seen as a result of this pandemic is that there definitely is more emphasis on mental health and mental health support. I feel like just over these last several months, we've seen just on different, you know, media avenues, just support websites where people can go or numbers where people can call to just get help. And so yeah. I think it's important that that's been highlighted, because I think for so often it's been one of those things like you don't talk about it, but we need to talk about it, you know.
It's a lot like grief.
Yes.
Right? It's yes. how our society, I don't think we do a great job with
right.
supporting those who are grieving over the long term.
Right.
You know, there's that expectation of, are you not, you know, are you still grieving and kind of getting over it? And mm-hmm. there's this presumption that, you know, it's supposed to happen in a certain time, and yeah. that's not the case.
Right.
You know, so I do, I totally agree with you. I think yeah. that having more resources available in general, but I wish that there was more of, I think, a closer look into the fact that those who are grieving need this all the time.
Right. They're in pain. Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to ask was, I know, like, in my life, I remember there was just a really bad point in my life. And my son was an infant, and I was just really struggling. And for me, the worst time was at night when I had to go to sleep, because during the day, it was like I was doing everything I needed to do and taking care of him. And, but at night when all of everything was quiet, it just, it was devastating for me.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for anyone who might be going through something like that?
Where nighttime is?
Yeah. When you're kind of forced to be still with yourself. So what I would do, I just would lay in the bed and I'd say, God, please help me. God, please help me. Just over and over and over again. And for some, you know, that calmed me down. But I don't know if you had any advice or...
Yeah, I think being alone with yourself is really difficult for a lot of people. And you're right. When it's quiet, it means you have to kind of figure out, like you start to hear what's going on, the thoughts in your head, and you start to feel. And, you know, I think one, journaling is always good. You know, if that's something that you, whether it's in, and I've learned recently, whether it's writing it out or typing it out, you know, you could text yourself, you can, whatever, it works. So I think journaling is great. There are reflections and meditations and different things that can be comforting for some people. You know, again, I think it's very individual on what people need. I would say if there is an opportunity to have a team of support and trying to find, you know, find that person that at 3 a.m. if you need to call them, you know, find that person.
So we're in the thick of the holiday. If you were working with a family and this is their first holiday without someone that, you know, their spouse or their sibling or their child, you know, partner, what would be some advice you might offer to them?
You know, I think it's, again, it's so difficult and so individual. I think the conversation just goes around what supports do they have in place? Right. And if they have family, then it's, the discussion goes to, okay, so do you have plans? Do you have something on your calendar for that day? I think scheduling something over the holidays kind of holds you accountable and kind of says, okay, I have an option. You know, so if it's whatever holiday you're celebrating, whether, you know, whatever it is, you can always choose to cancel.
That's right.
It's just having the ability to say, you know, 3 o'clock, I'm going to call my sister and we're just going to have kind of a phone conversation. Mm-hmm. It gives you kind of the morning to kind of handle whatever feelings you're kind of going through and to think at 3 o'clock, am I going to be able to call her? Sometimes just having something scheduled, I feel like can be helpful over the holidays. Mm-hmm. But there are many, you know, other things such as, you know, candle lighting and other ways to honor your loved one.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I think that some of that, it's just conversational about what would be meaningful to that specific family, that specific person, you know, thinking about who your loved one was and something that they might, whether have been, it might have been something they were passionate about, and maybe it's a donation you make in honor of their name. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were passionate about football, then maybe it's, you know, you look to make a donation to a local, you know, football team for uniforms or whatever it will go to. But finding a way to build connection with your loved one, I think is a starting point. But that conversation, I think, looks different for everyone.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's no universal answer for any of this because none of it is universal, you know?
Right. I think maybe the worst thing, maybe one of the worst things you could do, though, is to try to ignore it. What do you think about that?
Ignore the...
That you're going through this loss, that you're feeling this loss, and you say, I'm just going to put my head down. I'm going to put that over there. Can't deal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree that it's important to recognize. I think that it's everybody's different, but I do think that the ability to set healthy boundaries for yourself is important too, to say, you know what, today I can't. Today's not my day to do that.
Yep.
Again, it's one day. So we all say this is the holiday and this is the day that we have to celebrate this. But in reality, you could celebrate it another day. If that's not a day that you're waking up to say, you know, I'm going to go to this person's house, or I'm going to, you know, have dinner at this time and with my family, you know, if you're not up for it, I think those are your times where you say, here's my plan A.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't happen, here's plan B. And right now I think most of us are on plan B because of the pandemic, right? Yes. So nothing looks the same.
Yeah. Nothing's quote unquote normal.
Right. And then you say, okay, what's the next plan? And if it means I just can't.
Right.
I think that's okay.
Right.
You have people check on you. You have us build your support system. Yeah. But does it mean that you have to, you know, engage in everything you would have before? Absolutely not.
Right.
Yeah, I think it looks different for everyone, but I think having the ability to set, you know, there's a David Kessler.
Yes.
One of his quotes, and it says, in grief, do what you want, say what you want, and remember, no is a complete sentence. And I think that we all have to remember that sometimes it's just no, setting the boundary that no, I can't, no.
And being okay with that. I think sometimes some people feel like there's just this obligation to do X, Y, or Z, or to show up this way. And it is okay to say no.
Just no.
And it is a complete sentence. My mother would disagree, but that's okay. She's a retired English teacher. So is there anything else that you would like to say about this topic?
So I think one thing that I would end on is, you know, you never really know what someone's going through. It could be, you know, a person in the checkout line next to you. It could be someone that's, you know, pumping gas at the gas station. You just don't know what their story is. And so if anything, I would say this is a time to be kind and to remember that sometimes, you know, granted we have masks on now, so smiles, you know, smile with your eyes is what we do.
But, smiles.
But just trying to understand that, you know, everyone has something, but some people like this is, it may be, you just don't know.
You don't know. And being kind goes so far.
Be kind, show grace.
Show grace.
You know, I think that that's a big message, whether you're grieving, whether you're not, whether whatever it is, you know, again, people are losing jobs and people's home, you know, personal situations are changing. And you just, you know, I remember being in a Kroger at one point and thinking, oh my gosh, and someone said something and I burst into tears because it was just one of those days that I had so much going on. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, how did I do that? But you just never know. It was just one day in my life that was just lots of things happening, and we all have them. It doesn't make us, you know, less than. It truly is just life. Life some days is heavier than others.
Right. And we're all in it together, and while everybody's walk may be different, I mean, we all are carrying something, you know, or, you know, some pain or just obstacles. I mean, we're all right there in it together. So I completely agree. And I did have a breakdown moment in Kroger as well. So that's why I laughed when you said that. The lady yelled at me because I had more than 15 items in the express checkout, and I just lost it.
That was just enough.
It put me over the edge because I was just going through a really bad time.
It happens. It happens to everyone.
It does. So with our podcast, one piece that we like to do is an honor moment. And that's just where we take a time to just highlight someone or something of significance. And for this episode, I want to highlight the emotion, the feeling that is grief. I think it's really important that we acknowledge it. you know, that we talk about it. And to circle back to some of the things that you said, be patient with yourself, be kind to yourself, give yourself permission to grieve, to cry, to be sad, to go through and feel that. And finally, with this wonderful quote from Debbie Whelan, let people love you.
Let people love you.
Let people love you. So I think that's so important. So as we wrap up the segment, one thing I like to do is just let our listeners get to know a little bit more about my guests. So do you have a favorite restaurant?
I think my favorite restaurant is Chipotle. Is that, if that's considered a restaurant, I mean, I think it is, but it's not fine dining, but I do like some Chipotle.
Hey, I'm right there with you. Give me that chicken bowl any day, I'm all in. And so what's your go-to when you're feeling overwhelmed, Jen Prophet?
My go-to is walking. I like to take a walk. If it's too cold, I'll walk on the treadmill. And then I like to I'll like watch Netflix, which is not always the best thing when you're, you know, trying to clear your head, but it does kind of put my day away a little bit and distract me enough.
Yes.
When I'm outside, I mostly would, I'd rather walk outside and just kind of walk. And I don't usually listen to anything. A lot of it is just observing and taking in kind of just whatever sounds and just trying to clear the day away. So
I like that.
Yep. The kids know, like, oh, you're going for a walk. I'm like, yes, I am. Like they know that that's my time.
So. So unless there's something drastically wrong,
right,
don't call me.
Don't bother mom on her walk. Got it.
Well, that's great. So, Jen, I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk with me, dive a little bit deeper into this topic of grief. And I know it's, like we've said, it can be heavy, especially right now with what we're dealing with. But I think what you had to say is going to help people. And so I appreciate you sharing, you know, your knowledge and expertise. Also, I want to offer, we have some resources for people who... just if you need help, if you're looking for some support, we would suggest a couple of websites. What'syourgrief.com, Refuge in Grief, and griefincommon.com. So those are three websites that Jen thought would be good resources. There's a lot of great resources out there, but those were three that she highlighted. So feel free to reach out to those websites. You can also visit us at lifepassiton.org, and there's information there as well. Again, I appreciate you coming in to talk with us. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in today. And as I close, there are 108,476 men, women, and children in need of life-saving organ transplants in our country. And today, 20 people have died because they didn't receive their transplant in time. What can we do to help? We can register to be organ and tissue donors, or consider being a living kidney donor, because the vast majority of those men, women, and children need a life-saving kidney transplant. Thank you so much for listening. Please be kind to yourself and to others.
This episode is brought to you by Life Center. You have the potential to help save and enhance the lives of others, those who suffer from chronic illness or the effects of traumatic events. Statistics have shown that a new name is added to the national waiting list every 10 minutes. You have the opportunity to help others and save lives. You have the power to donate life. By designating your decision to become a donor, you have the opportunity to change the lives of many and save up to 8 lives. Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana say yes to donation by registering to become an organ, eye, or tissue donor today. Go to lifepassiton.org for more information. Thanks to Life Center for their continued support. Thank you for listening to This Thing Called Life. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcast to make sure you get updates on all new episodes. And we would truly appreciate it if you would share, like, or give us a review to help us grow.